Thank you, everybody, for tuning in today. My name's Andrew Savage, and I'm Business Development Manager for Architecture and Design with WeatherTex for a lot of New South Wales. Let's now welcome the lovely Deborah de Jong and Kelly Vandermeer. I'll just do a quick bio on each of them, and then we'll get started on today's talk. So Deborah de Jong is a seasoned interior designer who specializes in design and behavioral analysis and works with clients in residential, retail, and commercial sectors. Deborah's experience and skill set is impressive, with 6 years' experience presenting on commercial television, plus partnering in the foundation of a national furniture retailer whom we all know, from initial concept to the successful multi-million dollar organization it is today. So welcome, Deborah. And we're also welcoming today Kelly Vandermeer. Kelly is the founding partner of Design Partnership in Australia. Design Partnership is a business-led design agency. They specialize in retail, hospitality, workplace, and services markets. Kelly is a qualified architect, a member of a number of design institutes and associations, and he's received many awards over the years all around the world. And Kelly describes himself as a disruptor to the marketplace. So I'm sure we'll enjoy listening from you guys today. So I won't continue to carry on. I'm going to start with the first question to Deborah. So first things first, Deborah, what is behavioral design?
Thanks, Andrew. Behavioral design, actually, Kelly will speak a little bit more to that, but I'm going to give my own take. I'm two things by trade. One is an interior designer and the other is a human behavioral analyst. So fundamentally, behavioral design is the cross-pollination of the two worlds. So we have fundamental temperaments from a psychometric testing perspective that typecast you into a specific genre. And then we have interior design. And in essence, it's identity, which is the DNA, plus design identity. So who we are and what we fundamentally need to live as a person, but also how we need to live, so our surroundings and environment. And they are two, that the science of the melting of the two are absolutely fascinating. I'm looking for specifically at the moment to COVID, and people are saying, oh, we're all in the same boat. The reality is we're not in the same boat. We're all in the same storm. And some of us are navigating the storm with paddleboards, some with jet skis, some with boats, some with a surfboard, and others with scuba gear, and others are drowning. So we're all in the same boat, but using our different temperaments in order to navigate how we do COVID well. So navigating our storm, and some of what's transpiring at the moment is we're working from home and it's a slightly different circumstance than normal. So how do we live in a particular environment so that we create productivity and joy at this time? And then from a post-COVID perspective, how do we create environments that are COVID aware and looking after the built environment from a design, a human behavioral analytics and design perspective? That's my take.
And does it vary according to the temperament of the person? Like the approach, obviously, to the four different temperaments from a design perspective will vary accordingly.
Entirely differently. I mean, there's four fundamental tendencies, and they are goal setter, lifestyle, stability, and information. A goal setter, you're going to see this person, they are the CEOs, they're at the forefront, they're the captains, whether male or female, they lead the way, they charge the way, and their environment and what they love to live with and the way they like to design is entirely different from a lifestyle person. They like order, they're actually enough noise or movement in the space. They don't actually need to have a space that moves. They just need to have lots of strong, solid pieces. They love very strong boardrooms, strong, simplistic colours. Then we have a lifestyle temperament. Now, these are our artisans and poets and writers and creatives, and they're very right-brained. They need a lot of colour and stimulation around them to have catalytic moments of designing for themselves. So their workplace and their home life, it needs to be stimulation. They gain, and you'll know this from other creatives in your world, they'll see a picture or they'll see a colour and they'll have a catalytic moment that will project them into designing based on that inspiration. That's not the same as a goal setter. So goal setter, lifestyle, and they like high chroma colours and movement. And they're the ones struggling at the moment because lifestyle people are normally outgoing extroverts and they gain all of their energy from being in and around other people and their inspiration. Then we have the information temperament. Callie would be one of these people. Callie is quite happy in COVID because he's an introvert, very reflective, happy to have a quiet, neutral environment, but the devil is in the detail. When Callie does his designing, and I've seen a lot of his work in particular in restaurant design and hospitality, but it's all about the detail. How high is the chair? How high is the desk against the chair? How much backspace have I got behind me? What's the spatial planning? They're all about the detail. A CEO or a goal setter is not going to be interested. It's all about how do I look? And lifestyle, it's all about the fun and let's make it animated, let's entertain. The information person, it's all about the detail. And the last one is stability. And that's stability is all about the calm and the peace. I'll give you an illustration of a person, Professor James Donnelly, who I'm doing a podcast with next week. James is all about, I need it easy. He came to Sydney from Coffs Harbour recently and I took him for lunch. We went to the grounds and he went, oh, not coping. We went to Coogee Beach to the pavilion. Oh, not coping. And I had to sort of find a quiet corner on the top of a cliff where there was ocean and sand and nothing for him to go, okay, I can do Sydney. This is our calm and easy person. And the environments we need to create for them are very nurturing and very calming and soothing. We don't have loud animated colours. We don't have a lot of movement. We have very placid environments. So from my perspective, behavioural design is understanding the person and understanding how they need to live, how they need to work, how they need to play, and being aware in order to design prospectively moving forward for their success and productivity, but also their joy.
Excellent. And Callie, what's your take?
So behaviour design is a behavioural design as an origin, I think, in the early 80s with a book by Don Norman. Or studies by Don Norman, where he looked at psychology of design, specifically behavioral design, and that got adopted into digital space quite quickly, and only recently into physical space. But specifically why it's important, it takes into consideration, of course, experience design and design thinking, but it specifically looks at behavior. And why that's important is that if you take the fact that humans, as they emerged from the savannah plains some 200,000 years ago, they're still fundamentally the same in how they're hardwired. And they react instinctively the same to environments. And if you unpack that, how people behave in a social context, behavioral design comes very close to really framing that very well. So there's a saying that we love, that you can take the human out of the Stone Age, but not the Stone Age out of the human. Our wiring has not evolved that drastically because there's been no cataclysmic events. And so when you apply that kind of thinking to social space, how people behave within social context, behavioral design is a fantastic tool.
Mm. And so from what I'm getting here is we've got our four different sort of personality types, or what was the term that you used? Temperaments. And then we've got our evolution and our hardwired, historical motivations and drives. So we've got all of this stuff. And I would imagine there's some overlap as well, depending on people's moods and things. Sometimes they might be lifestyle. Sometimes they might be one of the other temperaments. How do we feel that this has been influenced by COVID and lockdown and what have you? And then I guess, what do we think is going to happen once, 80% of the population has been vaccinated and some of these restrictions are removed? What do you think is going to happen around design as a result? And I'll go to you first, Kelly.
So when we have situations like this, where there's an extreme situation, like this lockdown, then people behave in a very creative way. There's a lot of creative thought because it's constriction. And design, if you think about design is problem solving. At its base, it's turning an existing situation into a preferred one. And so if you look at these severe times in human history, I mean, you can go back, the Renaissance was as a result of the plague, and because of all that death and hardship. Beauty and arts was a result, and the rejection to an extent of the church because it didn't help in the time of death. So and then you look at some, so we can't really say what's going to happen beyond COVID. And anybody that says they know, don't mean they don't know. Technology is, there's a thing at the moment called tech acceleration. And it's just now, it's happening at such a rapid rate in the last 18 months that the projection is that we have 5 years of development that is being accelerated in this short time. So welcome to the year 2025 and 2022. We just don't know what's around the corner. And if you look at, but if you do, there's one thing that we do know. You can look back at the 80s when we had the severe economic downturn, the shortage of oil, and so it was a world problem. And someone like Jan Carlsen, who was then appointed CEO of Scandinavian Airlines, well, he was appointed because he managed to strip costs out of airlines prior. And that cost stripping made the airlines profitable, but not this time. And it caused a lot of controversy and the borders upset because he started spending money. But in a very specific way, he understood at the base that in times of contraction, it's the same as a saber-toothed tiger chasing you down, the fear and the, we go to a human space, right? We want to be with people. We want to go back to our tribe. So the only thing that he did, he looked at every single touch point of the human engagement, from curbside to checking in your luggage, to the first hello as you onboard, to how you got treated on the plane, put olives back into martinis, to how you got greeted or when you left. Incidentally, the act of leaving is 7 times more impactful than the act of arrival. That's the last thing you remember. And he turned a struggling airline into a profitable airline just by getting the human engagement to work. Mm. And we know that what's going to happen is that's going to be critically important. We know that post COVID. And you can see the one thing that happened, the last bastion was restaurants. Really, there was a direct connection to restaurants. There's now third-party delivery platforms has taken that away completely. And they've driven a wedge between a restaurateur and the customer. And so getting back, that's going to remain. That'll never leave again. That's here to stay. But the connection post this lockdown of how people get greeted at the front door, how they get treated as they sit at the table, that all of those connections, they're going to have to be accelerated, framed, and thought about. And really, to come back to Jan Carlsen, that he called it the moments of truth. It's been widely adopted since into the five moments, and a lot can be written about or said about that. But we do know that those moments or that the human interaction is going to be primary. And those that don't get it right, for example, I think, for example, in restaurants, that food is primary, they're going to get it wrong.
It's a bit of a reset in a way, isn't it? You know, when we're all put into this situation. I mean, Deborah, sort of, I guess, working on from what Callie's talking about, are you able to give me some examples of maybe behavioural design in homes? I mean, whether or not you talk about COVID and the effects of COVID is up to you, but just in general, moving on from what Callie said, what's your take on behavioural design in residential applications?
I think that the planet is under, well, particularly Australia at this point in time, because we've got a lot of lockdowns, and it puts everybody under a very stretched and stressed environment. So now, more than ever before, we have domestic violence, we have marital discord, we have children learning from home. The home is not the same home it was 6, 8, 10 weeks ago. We're suddenly in a pressure cooker situation. So now more than ever before, we have to create environments that are nurturing for our temperament. Now, here's an illustration for you, and this is purely in the domestic realm. We could go into a client's bathroom and you're going to have two temperaments in a bathroom. Over on the left-hand side, we've got the male, potentially, and I'm looking at you because I think you'd be guilty of this, and he has one shaver and one Hugo Boss aftershave, right? We might have somebody else, the other partner on the right-hand side, that has every Dyson hair unit available on the market, and they want every cosmetic, every powder, lotion, pill, hair.
That's probably more me.
So you have within one house two very different temperaments and the way they need to live. So you need to create spaces that work for those people in the one space. And it might be, and I can normally do this when you go into a residence. If you're looking at a clothes rack, he will have, you know, or the person will have pants, shirts, jackets, you know, coats, and that there's an order or there's a color coding, and there might be the other partner, and everything is, if you've got it on a hanger, it's a bonus. It's a, this might be thrown over the chair, and you have to design environments that are unique to those temperaments. So it's a matter of analyzing your client, coming to a mutual agreement. But while we're in COVID specifically, I think it's important we are regrouping. We had a chat with Brian Steele this week, Kelly and I, and I said to Brian, he just got off a frigate and he'd been away for 3 months. And I said, how are you managing isolation? And he said, this is a piece of cake. And I said, why is that? And he said, well, I was in a hostage situation. You know, I was in the forces and there was torture and I was in a, you know, 3x3 cell. And I think, you know, sometimes perspective is the most important thing for us when we're designing, because here am I feeling sorry for myself because I can't go and do a dinner party with 10 friends. But the reality is there is fresh air, there is biophilia and biomimicry and greenery, and I can breathe oxygen, I can make phone calls. I have all the freedom I need. What else does it take from my temperament to need that nurture? I need the placid greens around me. I need plants for oxygen and biophilia around me. I need to buy the better milk or the more sparkling mineral water. It's those sort of things that make me feel nurtured. And here's an illustration for you. I was cabin crew for Qantas for a long time because I wanted to travel the world. And there was nothing more exciting than having a lint pillow on my chocolate on my pillow rather than some tacky piece of chocolate that cost 5 cents less. And so we can create luxury in our environments by that professional fiddle. It might be the way that we style our bed. It might be the way that we place our art. And surrounding ourselves at this point in time specifically is important for nurture and to feel a sense of peace and calm. So moving forward, what does it look like? I think we've had a reset. I think we've had an opportunity to find out what the important things are, because it's not so much in the buy, it's not so much in the spend, it's not so much in the fastest or greatest. We're thankful for breathing air each day and getting up and not having to go to a hospital to visit a sick loved one. So I think it's a matter of creating those environments that are conducive to joy and nurture and love and protection and a pleasure. And we're going to be working from home a whole lot. So making sure your home environment and your home offices are, you know, a clean. If you have got a space that is, some of people can't function unless their desk is empty. They've got to have a very clear white space. Others need the movement, and just understanding yourself and designing for your clients based on their temperament. Yeah, as we move forward.
Yeah, it's interesting what you're saying about the working from home, because we're all, I guess, white collars. We can work from home. The tradies and the people that are living in areas like Canterbury and the southwest and so on, they can't, because they need to be on site to do their work. And so, you know, they're getting a lot of blame for some of the issues at the moment, but a lot of it's out of their control. Kelly, you've talked a little bit about behavioural design and hospitality and the various touch points. Did you want to expand? Because I know that Design Partnership does specialise in a lot of hospitality work. Did you want to expand on that?
Yeah, so talking to what I alluded to earlier and just starting with maybe with a, just to link up to what Deborah said about Brian Steele, he said something interesting, which I really loved last week. He said hospitality, because he's a very well-known food critic, right? He said hospitality post-COVID is going to have the cheers factor. And I said, what does that mean? He said, it's the place where everybody knows your name. It's going to be very important. So those connections, just linking up with that. So there's a lot of studies of late that says we don't remember taste. We remember taste in context with time and place. And if the time and place is incorrect or bad, it affects taste. And so if the time and place is great, specifically the environment that we create, and that's every single thing around you, the color, the warmth, the hue of the light. We spoke the other day about acoustics, like the exact acoustic quality. So there's a term called the Lombard effect. If the acoustics are wrong, Deborah will start talking a bit louder to me, because I can't hear her, and because she talks louder, you will start talking louder, Andrew, and so it starts spinning and spinning, and so it becomes this noise. So those are all things that are not physical things that we look at, but these are all massively important in in the restaurant space. So if you unpack, so you can unpack this getting back to the kind of the hard wiring. So we've identified really 8 patterns, just to come back to what you asked really, of how people behave when they enter a space and how they move inside, specifically our social spaces like restaurants, and how they sit. So there's a term that we've just called, and when we unpack it, called huddling, and that's the desire really. People get together en masse to go to a restaurant. If there were 2 restaurants next to each other, and the one had a lot of people and the other one no people, we will go to the full one. We want to be with people, right? That's a massive driver. The second one, once you've entered, big behavior and seating, is called framing. Well, we call it framing. So it's the desire to go sit along the perimeters first, with a big wall behind you. You can see the entire space in front of you. It's again think about the hardwiring that we have, it's protection. And so people behave in that exact manner. And you'll find that if all things being equal within the space, that those edges will fill up to 60 or 70% before people move to the center. And then you have things like, we wrote it, and I always forget what they are, so I write them down next to me. So things like the lookout, which is where even if the space is compromised in some way, it's an uncomfortable space. People can look at something. That's something to frame, even if that's internal, either internal or external. So one needs to create in awkward spaces these areas to look at. And closely to that is what the term we call sunflower, is really the desire that people have to sit facing sun or in the sun. You'll never be able to remove that again, hardwiring. And you can, of late, there's technology where you can even fake it. So where skylights really project the exact, and they're not skylights, they're really LCD screens that you build into the ceiling, and they really project exactly by coordinates, GPS coordinates, what the sky is doing above you. In that space, you could be 3 floors down in the basement. That creates the same effect, right? Mm. And then you have things like let me just look at it again. Borrowing is the deepest, darkest, most compromised crevice inside your restaurant. At the very back, there's a storeroom, can be turned into a positive space by making it comfortable. There's a restaurant, in fact, in London, which a client took me to called Hyde, and they have the space in the basement, and they're really kind of almost hidey holes. They're real, really contained spaces, but they get booked out all the time. You can't book it. And there's always people in it. We can link all of these things back. And then cocooning, which is creating space within the space that we sit in, that could just be slightly higher back, maybe some plants and stuff around us, so we feel protected, but we must be able to see the space. And then a thing that the restaurants don't make enough use of, and it's a very simple device that we call perching, is that being able to perch at a space that's higher than the rest. Again, you can see the connection, right? So you can even, so there's a magic number and magic height is 2 or 3 steps, no higher. If it's higher than that, then no. But there's the ability to just sit in a space, again, at the dark, deep backside of the restaurant. Nobody wants to go to, just lift it. So people can see over the restaurant. And then, of course, people gazing. It doesn't matter who we are, where we are, even if it's a trickle of people going past now and then, on a parking lot, whatever that may be, people like to people gaze. And so if you understand all those 8 fundamentals of what people do, and you kind of ask yourself along every step whether you've answered to those things, you can create a very successful restaurant.
Mm. So it's really, from what I'm hearing here, we're really creating spaces for interaction, spaces that suit the different temperaments of people. And obviously, a hospitality space is quite different to a domestic or residential space. And when you were describing all of those things, Kelly, I was thinking back to experiences I've had in restaurants and thinking, yeah, this all makes sense. It's almost like that this behavioral design is becoming a science.
Yeah.
It's probably always been bubbling along in the background, but now we're starting to really understand it in and of itself. And remember, everybody, you are quite welcome to send through any questions you might have through the chat portal. There was one question from Maria to Deborah. Who is Brian Steele?
Well, Kelly, you're probably best to answer that. You're probably friendlier with Brian. Do you want to unpack that one?
Brian Steele is I don't know his position in the army. He's a helicopter pilot, and he's brought that experience with people and in extreme situations. He's made his thesis, and it's just similar to us. I started as architect to interior designer to kind of behavioral designer, purely because of along the journey, getting to know more how interesting it is when we define those specific predictable things that people do. And from another angle, he got interested in the same thing, really through his days in the forces. And then through a series of happenings in his life, he became a food critic. And the food critic then brought him more insight into how people behave and observing in restaurants, the things that people do. And the conclusion that he came to as well was that that in social context, people behave in remarkably predictable manners. We just did let me just answer that question a little bit deeper. And then he did his thesis on behavioral design within social context. Mm. So we just did a workshop together recently on a restaurant that we need to, and it's they have quite a number of outlets. And within the workshop over 3 weeks, none of the interventions we came up with. So it was myself and him, the chief marketing officer, the brand manager, a floor manager and so forth. And none of the interventions in the end, nothing to do with design, nothing to do with anything to kind of shift the physical space, everything to do with shifting the human interaction. Mm. And so Brian was phenomenal in that workshop as well. And so we share a lot of passion within that space. Mm. You can look him up. He's quite well known as a food critic. In fact, what's remarkable, sorry, I'm taking a lot of time with this, but he has three pages that he goes to when he goes in as a food critic. Only on the third page, food comes into play. Only on the third page. The first two pages are just about all the things we've just spoken about, everything that surrounds the food. And he's of the opinion, he says, that food only plays 20%, has a 20% role to play in the enjoyment of a restaurant. That's quite a statement.
Yeah, we've all had experiences where, you know, you've gone to a restaurant and you've enjoyed the food, but the service has been so terrible that you think, yeah, well, I'll never go back there again. So, yes, it all makes sense. I mean, look, poor old restaurants, they never get a second chance, do they? You know, if they screw up, you think, oh, well, there's so much competition out there, I'll just go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But look, we're just about at the end of our half hour. We're keeping these WebinX events fairly short and sweet. Do our panelists have anything that they'd like to add?
You go, Deb.
I think again, moving forward, there's some things that will come into play, looking at recalibrating things like lifts and door handles and touchless. You know, obviously we're going to have to look at some germ gardens, some specifying things that are going to be mindful of, spatial planning when we're checking in. I think we're living in a whole new world. I don't think that this is going to go away in a hurry. I think it's going to be a slow process. But as designers, you know, we have to gene pool our resources and find suppliers that are going to help us specify things to navigate the environment in a more successful fashion. I'm looking forward to the day when we have got bans lifted and we can gather collectively again in restaurants without too much of a problem and be social, because we are social beings. But I think it would be good to possibly share resources of products that we can specify that are going to make that journey a little bit easier for everyone.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. So very, very, very interesting presentation from Deborah DeYoung and Kelly Vandermeer. Thank you guys so much for being here today. I'm Andrew Savage. Thanks, everyone, for attending today. Thank you again to our guests.